What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 195 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to, don't be a jerk.
Don't be. Let me answer your question first.
I'm not answering your question.
I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
Beards.
About beards. About beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we're going to talk about what we've been eating and then respond to two listener emails before opening up the mic to questions from our wonderful audience.
All right, that's right, Paul, because we are live at the Triangle Veg Fest. Beautiful.
I'm so glad they clapped. So, Andy, this is not your first time in North Carolina, but this is my first time in North Carolina.
What do you think so far?
I love it. It's great. We've also, Andy and I rarely, when we're together, which is not super often, we're usually just recording podcasts or like taking care of some sort of business or doing a veg fest. So it's been nice. Yesterday we had a full day together. We played mini golf at a children's amusement theme park thing.
Adult mini golf?
Every mini golf is adult mini golf, but we did an escape room, we ate some good food. It was a lot of fun. And Andy, I know you want to talk about one specific food place that we ate at.
Well, so I'm going to talk about a place that I'm sure everyone in here knows about. It's like the local darling, but Fiction Kitchen is going to be the place the Cheers. So I have to say, the Cheers tainted me a couple years back because it was the place that like everybody loves. And I went there and I was like, this is okay. And I didn't understand why everyone loved it. And we went last night, and I now understand why everybody loves it, because we got, with some wonderful friends, a smorgasbord of food. And I have to say, by far, my favorite was the barbecue plate.
Yes. Yes, it was great.
Some shredded, like, chicken, soy chicken or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, like, my dad grew up in North Carolina, so I was aware of the fact that, like, barbecue down here is just, like, vinegar-based, which always seemed like a weird concept to me, but I'm sold after last night's experience.
Yes, it was great. I thought everything that I had was really good, topped off by the Tres Leches cake.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Paul, that was like the place you were excited to go to, and I was like, tamper your expectations. But thankfully, it was really good.
It was very good.
But Paul,
yes.
As much as I like to talk about food, I'm way more interested in spending 1 hour talking about the haunted mansion that we're staying at right now.
So we, for the past two nights, we stayed at this place, Mason Street Manor, which was in Franklinton.
Not a fake town.
And for those of you who are unaware, it's run by a vegan couple, and they do weddings there. They host a lot of dinners there, fundraiser dinners there, which all sound great. I know last month they did like a spice themed dinner. This month or next month they're doing like their take on vegan fast foods. And yeah, and it's also in this like old creepy mansion, and we were able to explore the attic, which was just, it's very spooky, lots of trapdoors.
Well, it's so creepy that the attic has its own extra attic up top. And we explored, I had about 6% battery on my phone, so my phone light was about to die at any second. I knew that's when the monsters were going to get
But yeah, it was great. And if you're unaware, go check it out. Go to those fundraiser dinners, because I wish that I could go to some of them. I wish I lived closer.
The attic was a place where you'd look at a wall and you're like, I feel like there's more something behind it. And then you'd move a mirror, and in fact, there would be a secret passageway to a crawl space behind it.
Andy just wants to keep talking about the attic.
We found newspapers from 1925.
Yeah, like, it was cool.
It was very creepy.
It was very cool.
A sex ed book from like 1920.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
Shall we move on into the podcast?
I guess we can do that.
So what we're going to do today, we're going to answer a couple emails that we received, and then hopefully have some lively discussion about that, and then we're going to open up into the audience, so if you have any questions or if you want to ask us anything.
So start thinking about those now.
Yeah. So do you want me to read the first one, Andy?
Tee me up, Paul.
I know
that you want to answer the second question.
That's true. So this first email from Joe K. Joe emailed in. I recently got into an argument with a soon-to-be mother practicing veganism who said that she was not going to raise her child to be vegan because she wanted to let them choose. I argued that the child would never really get to choose because I and most people never choose to consume animal products. In a world where it is accepted, convenient, and normal to consume animal products, why would a child who probably does not have the mental or moral capacity capacity to identify with the lifestyle decide to practice veganism. Even if the mother practices veganism around the child, the youth most likely will not mimic her behavior. My mother is a vegetarian, but I still consumed animal products all the time at home. Long story short, do you think it is possible for children to choose veganism in a non-vegan world?
So I think the first thing I have to say is Paul and I are not parents.
We are not.
So I'm more interested in answering this because I think, like, philosophically it's interesting to look at. Because I think that this question's really weird to me because I don't think children really choose anything up to a certain age. And, like, people use this phrase, like, is veganism being forced on a child? But I'd say, like, literally everything that a parent chooses for their child is being forced onto them up to a certain point. Mm-hmm. And just because there's the societal norm of the world being not vegan, as pointed out in the email, then all of a sudden it's like a weird thing for a parent to choose, or I guess from the vegan perspective, to not let their child be vegan. When you know, I think about raising a child, I think about you're trying to impart your morals and your ethics and, you know, lifestyle habits, ways of looking at the world. That's what, like, literally every parent does for their child, whether they're, like, actively trying to do that or just by virtue of proximity. So I think that I agree with this email that it's, like, I wouldn't expect a child to choose anything, but they're going to choose whatever the parent, like, lays out for them. So if the parent doesn't lay out veganism as an option, why would they possibly choose that?
Well, I totally agree with all that you're saying, but and I definitely agree with the fact that as a parent, it's like not I am not a parent, but my hypothetical thought of what a parent would do is impart those kind of morals onto their children. But at the same time, I can also imagine as a parent, I would also want my child to, like, socialize with other kids and fit in with other kids. And mm-hmm. so I could see being worried if I was a parent that it's like, oh, okay, well, what if my child, like, doesn't get along with the other kids or has some, like, social troubles with the other kids because of their veganism? I could see that as a reason why someone would be hesitant to force their children to be vegan.
I get that, but I think, like, as a default, the world is, like, under, like, a racist, sexist, like, white, you know, patriarchy. Like, all of that, all these, like, horrible things that are sort of cloaking the world, and that it's, like, our active duty as, you know, stewards of, like, I guess, goodness to try to actively combat those things. So even if it is a part of the fabric of society, and it will set your child at odds to some level, that shouldn't you still try to, if you think that's the just and moral thing to do and that's how you've chosen to live your life, wouldn't you want to sort of usher your child into that? Because it's like, you have to buy your kids food no matter what, why not buy them vegan food? You have to entertain your child no matter what, why not take them to a zoo or a SeaWorld or something like that? It'd be like saying, sorry, Paul.
It's okay.
It'd be like saying that you're like, listen, I think it's wrong to murder people, but I'm gonna let my kid go kill a few people. They can decide for themselves, right? Is it any different than that?
Well, I think it's different because murdering someone is not like a societal thing that happens. You know, it's not like the norm. Whereas being vegan, unfortunately, is not the norm as well. You know,
which it never will be.
No. And which I think is also why we have things like in it was Italy, I think, where there was like I think it got struck down, but they were trying to put laws forth that made it illegal to force your kids to be vegan. And so it's like, because it's not the, like, the social norm, I feel like people, the general public, perceives it a lot differently. And what you were saying, which was like, if you are against these things, shouldn't you be against these things in all facets? Is it okay to make it so, like, your child who might not have the choice, like, they also have to be against these things? Is that okay, Andy?
Well, I mean, because that brings to the question, like, when you see parents bringing their children to, like, protests or things like that. And to me, I guess that is almost more of, like, beyond just, I need to provide food and shelter and hopefully, like, you know, mental, like, stimulation, all of those things. That, like, that to me sort of maybe goes into, like, where you are. But it's like, if you have to feed your child something, why not? Knowing that people of all ages, for the vast majority of the population, can be healthy and thrive on a plant-based diet. Like, why wouldn't you then purchase the foods that are in line with your ethical values that you would hope your child would then go on to promote in the world?
Well, what if you just did that? Like, when your child was at home, you purchased all this stuff for them, but then you said, I'm going to let them make their own decisions when they're out and about. But in this household, we're only going to eat vegan.
I feel like that's just what's going to happen anyway, because there's a certain point when you don't have control over what your offspring are doing when they go out into the world.
Yeah.
And like just like with everything, just like I don't want you to drink and drive or whatever, and on my watch you're not going to be drinking as like a 13-year-old or something like that. But they go out into the world with their friends, you don't have so much control, and you can have a discussion with them about why you think it's wrong to drink and drive and the danger you put yourself in and other people in. But ultimately, that's like their choice, and they're going to do that. And I think that's like all you can hope for. Like, I don't know if I would ever really be into like a parent that's like, I'm going to punish you if I find out that you're eating non-vegan food or went to SeaWorld or something like that. I feel like that might be taking it too far, because that seems like that's likely to just bring someone into like rebellion territory where they'd be like, screw you, mom and dad, I'm for sure not going to be vegan because of this.
Not that we know anything about parenting.
Paul would rule with an iron fist.
No, but that makes sense to me, that like you can control what you can control, and then there's going to be a point where it's like, hopefully you've instilled these things within them such that they'll make these sorts of decisions when they can make the decisions themselves.
Yeah. So I guess to bring it back to attempt to actually answer this question.
What's the question?
Which was, do you think it's possible for children to choose veganism in a non-vegan world? Like, one, I feel like that depends on the age of the child that you're actually talking about.
Yeah.
But what do you think about answering that question?
I don't know. I feel like I've always kind of thought that children, like, unless they were indoctrinated in, like, the non-vegan world, which is all around them, I think that most kids wouldn't choose to do this stuff. Most kids, some surely would. Mm-hmm. But I feel like kids don't want to partake in it when they find out like what it is that they're doing. They don't want to partake in those bad things.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm certainly not every kid would choose that, but I think if a kid was like explained these things, it wasn't just a parent saying like, this is what we're going to do, and like, I don't need to explain to you why, but like, we're eating vegan in this household. But if they really like explained the empathy part of it and the compassion of it and stuff like that, I do think that that's something that many kids would latch onto. Certainly not all kids, but
yeah. Yeah, I think there's like a point in life when people start to be able to choose things for themselves, and you start to know who you are. And that process probably doesn't even really begin until at least a few years of age. And like, so it's like up to a certain point, the parent is going to sort of default be doing that. But I do think it is not really giving children enough credit. For as bad as I am at communicating with children, like, I feel like that this type of question doesn't give them enough credit to understand right from wrong, or to understand, you know, that, oh, here's this dog, here's this rabbit, and why would I want to hurt this rabbit? This rabbit is my friend. And so it's like not giving children enough credit to sort of make those simple choices, because I think on some level they are very simple choices. They get down to, should I hurt someone if I don't have to? Like, mm-hmm. Just the golden rule type of thinking.
Yeah.
No, so I'm going to rule, I think that children can choose veganism, but there's just a point in life where the adults have to choose that for them, because the child is not going to the grocery store. They don't have money, they don't have transportation, and it's up to the parent to do that for them.
It's a funny visual, though. Think about a little baby driving a car.
Well, they have those at the supermarket. Those
little, that's true. Shopping carts. That's true. Do you want to move on to this next question?
Let's move on. So, Paul, the Impossible Whopper.
Love talking about it.
So does the internet. And we've talked about it many times on the show. I think we've devoted at least 2 full episodes to talking about the animal testing aspect of the Impossible Burger. Unbeknownst to probably most of the audience, we actually just recently recorded a bonus episode talking all about the outrage around the shared surface that the Whopper comes upon default if you order an Impossible Whopper. And so we don't want to retread those conversations, but I think for the benefit of the people that are here that probably don't listen to the show regularly, let's kind of give like a brief rundown, because there's amazingly still more to talk about with mm-hmm. this. It seems like more and more keeps coming up. So I think like the first big thing, Paul, the animal testing.
Yes.
Episode 131, we talked all about everything that was going on with the FDA and Impossible, and we sort of really revisited our stance. Because I think initially we were like, screw Impossible, like, I can't believe they did this, this is horrible. And then ultimately sort of where we came down, at least I will not speak for you, Paul, but I feel like we're generally pretty much in the same boat in that we don't like that it happened. We don't like agree with it. We don't necessarily think that it was the only path forward, but we understand why Impossible would feel like that was the situation that they had to do in order to reach mass market. And just from like a matter of practicality, I think where we fall now is, is it worth our time and effort to, even if personally we come to the conclusion that it's not for us, we don't want to eat it, even if we just think it's gross because it's too realistic, but is it worth a single second of our advocacy time to actively try to get other people to not eat it? And where I fall down on that is, no, I don't think that it's worth that time and effort. I think that, like, the biggest thing is, this is the burger that has made it, like, through like the gate or whatever it is, and it's getting into places even more so than the Beyond Burger at this point. And from a practical standpoint, it seems silly to us to spend a single second trying to convince people not to eat it when it clearly has made so many inroads in restaurants to non-vegans, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's where we stand with, like, the animal testing side of things. Mm-hmm. And so we recently talked about the cross-contamination, because that's, like, the new thing. People are saying, if you eat this burger, which is cooked on a shared grill, that you are not vegan, that this product is not vegan, and therefore it's like destroying the movement, it's betraying the animals if you eat this burger.
Yeah, so this is what we talked a lot about in the recent bonus episode that we just put out. And I feel like, Andy, I'll also not speak for you, but I feel like where we kind of landed on it was that this whole the whole cross-contamination thing, in and of itself, obviously, like, different situations have different factors going on, but in and of itself, I feel like we are of the opinion that the cross-contamination thing does not make something not vegan. And I think where we fell specifically with the Impossible Whopper was, it's like, when Burger King is buying the burger from Impossible, they're buying something that does not contain any animal products in it. And when we buy the Impossible Whopper from Burger King, what we're doing is promoting that exchange to continue to happen. So there's no purchasing of animal products. There's no money that's going specifically towards the animal products. Is that fair to say, Andy?
Yeah, from like a supply and demand side of looking at things, which is one aspect of veganism.
Yeah, and certainly, we don't think anyone has to eat the Impossible Whopper. We're not saying everyone has to go out and support this thing. But like Andy said, I feel like where we're kind of falling is, like, if it's not your jam, then, like, it doesn't need to be your jam. But I guess don't spend your time, like, advocating against this thing when there could be other avenues that we could be putting our time and energy towards.
Yeah. And I think we try not to fall into arguments that are like, you should do this and not that kind of advocacy, because that's like an endless rabbit hole you could go down. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like an incredibly unhelpful use of time to spend time arguing about the Impossible Whopper.
And certainly there are many people arguing
which
about.
I know we've devoted many hours to talking about on the podcast, but that is what we do. Okay, so let's get into it, Paul.
Yeah, so we have a new, like, someone emailed us in with a kind of different, a different question or a different take on the Impossible Whopper that we hadn't thought about before. So hit me with it, Andy.
All right. David B. from Homer, Alaska emails in. I know some vegans who won't eat fries have been cooked in the same fryer as animal products, and the Impossible Whopper by default is cooked on the same surface as animal flesh. I personally don't care that much. I'm abstaining from these foods because I don't want to support the animal product industries financially. And to the company that supplies the cow's flesh, it doesn't matter to them which grill my vegan burger is cooked on. It does cause the restaurant to take more time and effort in the preparation, which, in a sense, is punishing them for offering a vegan alternative. I totally understand those who abstain because they hate the taste of meat or they have an allergy to certain ingredients, but are we helping the cause by demanding different cooking surfaces, or are we making veganism look incredibly difficult?
So
this is like a different side of it, which is, like, from a practical standpoint, is it important that we make veganism look easy? And does, because at Burger King, you can say, please cook that in a microwave, and they will do that for you, which sounds like a horrible way to cook a burger, but they will do that for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that by doing that, it's making veganism look difficult? And let me first ask you, who do you think that would make veganism look difficult to?
I mean,
who's perceiving that action as easy or hard?
Well, I think it matters, like, because a lot of the Facebook arguments that I've been seeing are behind closed doors, so to speak, in, like, vegan-specific groups. So certainly these conversations are happening in more public spaces as well. But a lot of the ones where people are, like, viciously going after each other are in vegan-specific groups. So I guess in that sense, like, it's they're not interacting as much with non-vegans, so I don't know if in those cases I would say, oh, it's making vegans look bad because not that many non-vegans are witnessing that. In terms of when you're actually ordering it from Burger King, like, I guess if the person standing behind you here overhears you saying those sorts of things, I guess they might be like, wow, I wouldn't even think to do that or something like that. But I feel like the people who are most directly being affected are, like, the Burger King employees in this case. And I will say, I've seen a lot of people post pictures of, I think it's at Burger King, but there's like a little card that says like, this is the deal with the Impossible Whopper, because I'm sure they have so many people asking the same five questions over and over again that they made like a little sheet just for people to be like, there, look at, these are your frequently asked questions.
Like, is the bun vegan?
Is the bun vegan, yeah. But, which it is. And one of the things says, like, oh, where is it cooked? And it says it's default cooked on the same kind of conveyor belt flame broiler thing as the other burgers, but you can ask us and we will microwave it. And I feel like the fact that they are offering it, of course it might just be because, oh, I'm sure it is because so many people have made us think about it that it caused this thing to happen. But to me, it kind of seems like because they're offering it, it's just, to the employees, it's probably just like, oh, this is just like another step in the process of things that we have to do.
Yeah.
I imagine it's not that much more difficult for them, you know, to do one or the other, or it's like in the grand process of all the things that they are doing throughout the day, I feel like maybe it's such a minor thing that they wouldn't even care about it.
Yeah, I think specifically with this instance of the separate cooking surface, it seems like such a minor detail in the ordering process, and maybe it's a slight annoyance to the actual employees, but to me it feels like that is not, like, who thinks that's hard? It's like the employee, I guess. But the people who online are saying you absolutely must get it cooked in the microwave or else it's not vegan and you therefore are not vegan and therefore you're hurting animals, I do think that makes it look difficult to people.
Yes, and again, I feel like most of that is happening in Facebook, like closed Facebook groups, but I'm sure some of it spills out into the public.
Yeah.
So is that, like, but shouldn't we kind of be able to, if that's what the thing that would make us the most comfortable, like, shouldn't we be able to do that?
I mean, so that's where I fall. I am someone that, like, hates to inconvenience servers. So if I'm going somewhere I've never been before, I am researching menus online. I am looking up, is something vegan at this place? And last resort, God forbid, I will make a phone call and ask them, like, what's vegan? What can you do for me? Now, generally, I'm a hermit who lives by himself, so I don't, like, really have to go to places I don't want to go. But occasionally, it does happen. Mm-hmm. And so, to me, I do worry about that if I am with a bunch of people and I'm ordering at a restaurant and I'm asking them like a ton of questions. And that's just like me, but like the servers are there to, you know, accommodate guests within reason. And I think as long as you're not being like a jerk about it, that if you're just like, hey, I'm sorry, I just have a few questions. Do you know if this, could you check on that? Like, I'm sure they're like, but I don't think like in the long run, it's ultimately like that. I don't think to the point where if you feel like this is what you need to do to live up to your ethics, that you should not do that. Mm-hmm. I don't think I don't think that's something that we should be concerned about.
Yeah, but I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, I think if you're not a jerk about it, then I don't think the employee is going to be like, oh, this person is so inconveniencing me. I think if you are a jerk about it, then people might be like, wow, this thing left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
Figuratively speaking. and like, I'm associating this thing with this person being vegan, you know? Like, the specific request they were asking was about veganism, so now I have that kind of negative association. I could see that happening, maybe.
Yeah.
But in general, I feel like if you're doing something to like, make your experience more comfortable, again, like you said, within reason, I don't think it's a bad thing to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Cool.
We solved that problem.
Yeah, that was good.
So we do have one more email that we can go into, but I think we have about 20 minutes or so left. So if there is anybody in the audience that has questions, we have a microphone, in fact.
I was going to make him go up to this podium.
Oh, you actually have to give a speech on your dissertation if you have a question.
Hi.
Hello.
So I saw you guys in the Atlanta Veg Fest, I think, last year. I've been watching your podcast. I don't go in order, so I'm not sure if this question has already been addressed. And I wanted to ask it last year, but I was kind of scared and a little ashamed, and I feel the same way now, so I'm really nervous. But I love the ethical gray areas because I have issues with that a lot. But let me preface this by saying that I'm weird. Like, I'm a weirdo. Like, as long as I can remember, I would always go in the woods and, like, I loved nature and being in the natural world. I was always, like, putting rocks in my pocket and digging in the dirt and finding, like, things that, like, other people were probably grossed out by. But I love taxidermy, I guess, like skulls and stuff like that, like animal remains. Like, I've always found a real beauty in that. Like, I've never been, like, grossed out by it. And I went vegan for ethical reasons. I was a vegetarian for a really long time. So I feel like that's a really gray area for me, and I struggle with it because I had some animal bones that, like, friends and family have found, like, in the woods, and they, like, gave it to me because they know, like, I'm weird and I really like that stuff. But I've gotten rid of it because I feel like I can't have those things now. Like, I can't display them because it's not really vegan. Like, I don't know, because I see so much beauty in it. Like, I go antiquing and thrifting a lot, and there's always, like, really scary, like, taxidermy and stuff, or, like, really large animal skulls and bones on display, like, hanging up. And I see a lot of beauty in it, but I'll go with friends who are not vegan, not vegetarian at all, and they get really sad. They're like, oh, poor animal. And I'm like, oh, that's so beautiful. Like, I'm, like, spellbound by it. So, like, I feel weird. Like, I'm not a good vegan because I see beauty in it instead of being, like, totally disgusted. Like, I feel like a weird vegan, and I just don't know what your thoughts on it, what other people's thoughts are on it. Like, I don't know.
So I guess just to clarify, so, like, all of the bones and whatever on display are all things that have just been, like, found. You have not personally been, like...
Things that I have, yes. Yes. There's... like, I have deer antlers. I found out that deer, they naturally shed antlers. And, like, a lot during, like, deer season or whatever, like, people will just find them in the woods, like, scavenge. And I've gotten them that way through buying them online. And there's, like, a vulture culture, like, tumblers and, like, things like that where people, like, they live in the woods and wooded areas and they find these animal remains and they sell them online. But I haven't done that in years because, again, I felt weird because I'm giving someone money for animal remains. That also seems, like, not vegan, even if it is just, like, naturally they found them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where the line is. Like, you know.
Got a line, Paul?
Well, I think the line is going to be different for different people. So
right,
I think you have
right.
to, like, figure out what your line is. And also, yeah. I mean, this is just going to be our opinions, and we're not, like, experts on what's right and what's wrong. But I think, first of all, I think, like, I would say don't be ashamed just for, like, looking at those things and saying, like, oh, I see beauty in this thing. Mm. I think in that, just with that, like, you shouldn't, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I wouldn't feel ashamed about just how you feel. You know, then it's like, then you have to decide via your morals, like, what you're going to do from there. But I feel like just the feeling that you have is not something to be ashamed of in itself.
Right.
I think for me, personally, I think I would probably draw the line at maybe selling the things, because then I would feel like, oh, I'm profiting off of, off of this other thing.
Yeah.
I also think you maybe run the risk of other people misinterpreting, like, what you're trying to do as well.
Right.
Like, if, like, you see this thing in taxidermy that other people see, like, oh, this is, like, a hunting thing or something like that.
Yes.
So I feel like you maybe run that sort of risk as well. But I personally, like, if I find, like, on the beach or something, if I find, like, a shell or, like, a cool tooth or, like,
I do that all the time.
Something like
again,
that.
Like, all the time. Like, I'm always, like, as a kid, just bringing, like, in weird things. And, like, the other week, there were butterfly wings in my driveway, and I was like, oh. So I went in, I got, like, a Ziploc bag, and I put them in there. But, like, they're standing on, like, my bookshelf, because I'm like, what should I do with these? I feel weird. Like, I shouldn't have these. I don't know.
What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll echo what you said, which is, like, obviously we're not up here to tell people how to live their lives, and we can only speak to how we personally feel about it. Personally, I mean, I guess I know many people that do have issues with that. I personally don't. I also wouldn't have an issue if someone found, like, a human skull they thought looked cool and, like,
same,
put it on display.
Me too.
And to me, that's kind of my test, is, like, would I be upset
thing.
If...
Yeah, that's how I also feel. Like, I'm not going to eat a human. I'm not going to eat an animal. I'm not going to abuse a human. I wouldn't abuse an animal. Would I have a human skull? Maybe, probably. It's pretty cool. I don't know.
I mean, so, I feel like if you find a human skull on the beach,
I might ask a question.
Taking that home.
But yeah, so I feel like, yeah, you just kind of need to figure out where your line is and where your comfort level is, and also be aware of, like, how other people are interpreting it as well when you're trying to figure all that stuff out.
Yeah,
that's what I would say.
All right. Do we have any other questions? There we go.
Yes.
All right. So it's sort of like a follow-up to the Burger King thing. I actually work in the food industry, and we do cook vegan products. So for Burger King, I feel like if they were going to offer this vegan burger and this product, and they're mass producing it across the nation, yes, they probably should have brought a smaller grill just for their burger. Because them putting in the microwave, you also don't know what else has been in that microwave. It's the same thing.
I feel like you've just opened up a whole other online debate that's about to happen.
People in this room are like texting on the phone.
And like for other places, like if you're a restaurant that isn't solely vegan and you have vegan products, it is hard to buy a whole new piece of equipment, especially if you're a smaller restaurant. You're not going to buy a thousand piece of dollar equipment just for one vegan product, but you do have the option to clean that part of the grill or only save that part of the grill for that product. Same with like gluten-free things and, you know, fish things and all that stuff. Like you sort of save a piece that is not cross-contaminated. So it's not so much a question, but it's a follow-up just to broaden.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think White Castle uses a separate grill for their Impossible sliders. So it certainly is. It's possible. I think it's not impossible. I think like Burger King has the unique, they're doing the flame broiled thing, which is on like the conveyor belt thing. So it's like,
it's a little harder. They could, I mean, conveyor belts, when you put them through, you could have like one, like solely the right side, which is how
I am wondering if they will eventually adopt that, knowing the uproar that's happened. But again, I don't know. I don't know how many people, if they have any way to determine how many people didn't come and purchase something because it was on the Shield Grill. Like, obviously, that's, like, very hard data to get. From what I gather, the burger is doing incredibly well, and they might just be like, well, who cares? Because, like, people are buying it anyway. But I agree. It seems like they could have, like, a track on that thing that's just, that's the veggie one. Because from everyone I've heard that's asked employees, they're like, the Impossible is selling as well, if not better than the cow's flesh burger, so it might be coming. Who knows?
I think we need to get you in contact with the Burger King so you can give him some of these ideas. But that is, it does seem simple that they could just put them on different sides. Any other questions?
So I'm not vegan and vegetarian, but I'm just wondering, so I just read haphazardly about cats not being able to survive without meat, or certainly not thrive. And I was just wondering, so does that mean vegans, they don't have cats? Or, I mean, what would you do if you were a cat owner and you wanted to go vegan?
This is about as contentious as the Impossible Whopper, I would say. So I think that could certainly be like a really long conversation. There are people who will insist that cats can thrive on a vegan diet. I'm not one of those people, but I basically, my personal stance is that I wouldn't have a cat. Which, like, I'm certainly not in a place to foster any type of life. I can barely take care of myself. But certainly there are lots of vegans that do have cats, and it's sort of one of those things that the reason why that there are so many cats is that's also, like, a human issue. And so it's certainly a really tough ethical gray area because it's like, do we not owe these cats some quality of life and to take them in and foster them because we've created this problem? And at the same time, by helping these cats, that means that other animals do have to die. So, I think a lot of vegans just sort of are at peace with that. I know this is like sort of like a weird way to look at it, but if you think about like the amount of like animal that must feed a cat to sustain them, if you're feeding them just like cows, it's like, it's still obviously not even a one-to-one like conversion, but something like that is something where you're taking like the least amount of life to feed the cat just by virtue of how large a cow is compared to like a fish or a chicken or something like that. But I mean, there's a website called Vegan Cats, and even they don't recommend that you feed your cat fully vegan. So
I'll also say, I think there are some vegans who also, because I think it is, I think I can speak generally that vegans are in favor of adopting cats and dogs instead of buying them. But if that is your stance, then I think a lot of vegans are comfortable, or maybe kind of comfortable with the fact that if that's all that we do, eventually there won't be like a cat industry anymore or a dog industry, and eventually we would get to a world where we don't have cats and dogs as pets. And so I think, like Andy was saying, this is the situation where it's like we've made things so bad for instance, for cats that like now it. Should we take this responsibility and do something about it? Or do we just say like, well, now this is your problem?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my stance is honestly kind of, it's almost like cowardly. Like, I'm not going to have a cat. I'm not going to think about it. But I think that that's where a lot of people stand. But I would say like at least half the vegans I know have cats.
A lot of vegans have cats.
Cats are pretty great.
big fan. Love you guys. So I teach chemistry at a local community college, and I don't really encounter how to talk to my colleagues because they're very science-minded, and so they're open-minded about veganism. But I have a problem talking to, like, everyday people, just like a lot of people in the vegan community that aren't science-minded. And so in this community, I've noticed that there are a lot of people that are like anti-vaxxers and anti-GMOs and stuff like that. And I have a really hard time trying to explain to them why they shouldn't be so afraid of vaccines or GMOs. And I don't think you have done a GMO podcast or no, yeah. So I didn't know if you had any advice on how to talk to those kind of people, because I know both of you are pretty pretty good at critical thinking, and so any advice that you could offer me would be really great.
Well, I will say, I feel like you are the person that has much more expertise in this area than we do, so it's like, because what I was actually going to say was, it's like, I'm not great at talking to a lot of people and a lot of, like, types of people. I know Andy's probably not good at talking to children. So it's like, I feel like you have this area of expertise where it's like, you are knowledgeable about these things, and you're probably better at talking about these things than we would be. This doesn't answer your question.
Well, I guess I've noticed just a lot of people are really close-minded. They'll just go back to saying things like, well, the EU has banned GMOs, so, and then I guess I'm asking more of a question, how do I talk to people that are just so close-minded, or do I just give up?
I think there's a lot of value in picking your battles, and that there's, you know, 7 billion people on this planet, and obviously not all of them are your coworkers, but I'd prefer to spend my time talking to people that are open to the message. Like, it can feel good to debate someone and, like, just destroy them with facts and, you know, like, vegan destroys farmer and, like, all that stuff. You know, like, that can feel good, I guess, but, like, ultimately I don't think that that's, like, a very helpful thing to do. So I would say that, like, not that you're saying you are doing this, but, like, don't let your happiness depend on converting your coworkers or getting them open to that. And, like, if they bring those things up, like, have that conversation, like, make sure you have your information down and all of that. But if they're like, I can't go vegan because vegans eat too many GMOs, it'd be like, there's plenty of vegans that also hate GMOs and all that stuff. And I think that one day we will do a GMO episode, and it's going to require, like, way more research than we want to do. And we'll probably get way more hate mail than we want to get. But So I know that is probably not, like, the most satisfactory answer, because I know, like, we want to be like, how can we, like, reach everyone and how can we get to everyone? And there's some people that, you know, the best way to reach them is to just not engage. And if they bring it up, have that conversation with them, but don't make it, like, your active mission to convert them.
Yeah, and I think also it's like Andy was saying, some people, it's like, you put the facts forward, and that's all that you really can do. You do it in, like, an efficient way, then there might not be much else that you can do in some situations.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think we have time for maybe one more question.
Are we pushing it? Does no one else have a question? Like, oh, yes.
Oh, I think there's two.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
This is my first Veg Fest.
Welcome.
I'm also not vegetarian or vegan. I've been considering being vegetarian since I was, like, 17, and I'm 22. But the thing is my whole family, they are meat eaters, and then also I'm Laotian and Thai, so a lot of meat is included in our foods, like even things such as small as, like, fish sauce and stuff like that. So do you have any advice or wise words for me? Because it's still important that I keep my culture, and I love food, and food's a big part of our culture, but it's so, like, meat and meat products are so infused in our food, so, yeah.
Thank you, Andy.
Well, for one, welcome to the Veg Fest. I think it's awesome that you came. This is, like, a really good place to come and explore and just sort of see what the community has to offer, or at least this section of the community. I think that it's important, obviously, for connecting with your culture, like, seek out those. I don't have any resources off the top of my head, but I could, like, guarantee that there's probably people that are in your shoes that are dealing with that. And, like, obviously that is not us, so I think that, you know, seeking out those resources, you know, which I'm sure could be like a Google away. I think usually that's like the good place to find, because I think that we both like to say that it's important to have your community, and that's like your sort of your backup and your support when you are trying to explore these things. And it can be really hard. Like, pretty much any family I can think of, like most people are like, we're super meat heavy. We eat all this meat, and it's like hard to, even like an Italian family or something like that. It's like the centerpiece of every meal is like some big meaty thing. And so it can be hard, especially if your family members aren't super open to it. But I think, you know, just sort of doing the research and sort of finding your community of people that are like, we are, you know, Thai vegan, Laotian vegan, and we found a way to still keep our culture intact, still explore the foods that we love to eat, but from a vegan angle. I think that that's probably like the best way to go, and I wish I had better resources for you. All right, Paul. Well, it may be impossible for vegans to agree about the Impossible Whopper, but it is certainly possible to get this entire crowd to say the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
Cool.
Thank you all so much for coming out.